Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners, however you've decided to spend this hour with us. We are very, 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 very glad to have you. Tonight, we are going to be talking about something, re-virginization, which I bet you were thinking, Madonna made that popular years ago when she brought out her song Like a Virgin, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about something a lot more in depth than that. And joining me tonight is Dr. Faisal. Help me out, my darling.
It's Sahukan.
Sahukan. Dr. Faisal Sahukan is joining me tonight, and he's the author of Dating the Ethnic Man. And I'm very excited to have him on the show. He was just in the province not that long ago, so you might have caught him just in regards to all about re-virginization. So tell me a little bit about what exactly re-virginization is.
Hi, Caroline. Thanks for having me back.
I'm glad to have you back.
I don't know if you're going to have me back after this show.
That sounds tempting.
Well, re-virginization. This is a medical process called hymenoplasty, and it started 5 years ago.
And I heard you correctly, hymenoplasty.
Hymenoplasty. There you go.
Who in the world would want to put their hymen back on?
Well, some women do, and for different reasons, which we can get into. It's a process procedure pioneered by a plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills.
Of course.
Where else? And it's a one-hour outpatient procedure where a woman goes in and has her hymen reattached surgically.
So this is going to sound like a really silly question. What happens to your hymen when it breaks?
Well, when it actually breaks, you talked about before the surgery, what happens is it bursts and there's remnants of the hymen still attached to the inner labia. And so what this procedure does, it is through laser technology, it reattaches these remnants and stitches it together. Yes, ouch.
My legs are just seizing among other body parts now. It just does not sound particularly comfortable.
Well, you know, many of the women that I've spoken with, they say, well, geez, you know, if I broke it once and I went through that pain, why would I want to do it again?
And that is a very good question. Why would any woman in this world want to do this again?
Right. Well, there's a lot of reasons. One reason that I have been given that some people have said is that, well, you know, I want to give it as a gift to my husband because my husband wasn't my first one. And so now for our 20th anniversary or our 25th anniversary, I want to give this as a gift to him.
Wow. So after 20 years of having sex with the same person, hey, baby, I'm going to be a virgin for you all over again.
There you go.
How many remnants are left after that amount of time?
Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, some women prefer to buy lingerie and surprise their husband on the 25th anniversary. And this is a new procedure that started. The thing is, that's one reason. Mm-hmm. There's other reasons. Now, that reason is fine because there's actually no deception. The husband knows about it. The wife knows about it. It's between them. It's their couple thing, right?
And you mentioned the word deception.
Mm-hmm. Well, in some communities, in some in Canada even, people are having this done as a way to deceive their potential future husband or his family or even their own family because of the consequences of being found out to be not a virgin before marriage.
Okay, in places like India, we talked about this in the green room, you said that brides are still getting burned because of this.
In certain places, in villages in the Middle East, you still hear stories about the morning after, where the mother-in-law comes in and sees that, wait a minute. There's no blood on the sheets. Oh, she must not have been a virgin. Okay. And so burning brides, as it's commonly called, is an extreme form of consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you have lots of other things. I mean, life could be quite terrible for a woman who's being found out in these cultures to not be have been a virgin up till their wedding night.
Well, just reputation alone, like before anything else, is pretty horrific.
Well, see, the thing is, in many cultures, the girl who gets married carries the family's honor. And so the thing is, if she's found out to not be a virgin before marriage, up to marriage, if she's had premarital sex, then that's a big shame on the family. And many times the girl is ostracized at the very least.
Mm-hmm. And if there's sexual abuse as a child or things like that, and which does happen regardless which culture it is.
Sure. I mean, with hymenoplasty, one of the people who actually get it are victims of rape. So the thing is, now here, they've been hurt once.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've been put through this process saying that there's something wrong with them, that they have to correct something that has happened to them.
Wow.
Right? And then another group of people are prostitutes, or escorts, if you would like to call them, who now want to get married. And so they want to put that past behind them, physically, I guess, by reconstructing the hymen. You know, what I do with my clients, who any clients who actually thinks about getting the procedure done, we go through this whole evaluation process to see what is more important. First of all, I believe in open, honest, non-judgmental communication. I believe that honesty is the best policy.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, I mean, the truth always comes out. You know, you could create this sense of this hymen, but keep in mind, even with a hymenoplasty, there's no guarantee that this woman will bleed.
There's no guarantee, even if you do have a hymen, that you're going to bleed, as you're saying.
That's it. So the thing is, there's so I go through this emotional type of counseling with these clients to realize that there's nothing wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
The decisions they made, if it worked for them, that's all right. If there's any fear that somebody will find out, well, we then try to bring that person or, for example, the parents into our sessions, and we go through, and ultimately the parents realize, we get to a part where they have to make a choice. Either they save face in the community, or they see what's really important, which is their daughter.
Is there a lot of value in Vancouver, do you find, in women in a lot of ethnic cultures, just in general? Or, because we've got a reputation worldwide as not being as important as men's.
Yes, value in a sense that this, today, in the South Asian community, for example, there's more premarital sex than there ever has been.
Why is that?
Well, I think there's that sense of, there's a lot of people who have immigrated here, and they're torn between two cultures. The cultures preached by their parents at home, and then the more of the open, liberal, Western lifestyle.
Mm.
And the thing is, it's a natural curiosity and impulse to try to assimilate into a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And we in the West, you know, we're sex positive. We think sex is a functional part of dating. And so there's these women who actually date and partake in sexual activities, premarital sex. But then if they are either pressured, coerced, or if they maybe make their own mind that they prefer to have an arranged marriage later on in life, then the question comes up, okay, will this person who I've agreed to marry, will he expect me to be a virgin? Now, if this person is living maybe in the Middle East or, you know, back home, then chances are he will want a virgin bride. So there's a lot of pressure put on the female.
As a man, what is the value of having a virgin?
Okay. Now, here's the thing. There's a Western man, a Western man, a Caucasian man, will answer this differently from, say, for example, an ethnic man.
Okay.
We here in the West, we look at sex as a functional part of our relationship, dating or marriage. And a Western man typically wants an experienced bride so that he can, I mean, here's the thing, this old thing about men having to make love to their bride or their wife. Today, the Western man believes and needs making love to be a dual process, an interaction process, so that it's not make love to me, it's make love with me. Hmm. He believes that. So he wants a more experienced bride who's not a virgin, right? With the ethnic man, he still looks at a wife as someone who's very pure. So he relates purity with virginity. And so even though he may have numerous sexual partners, but when it comes to marriage, he wants the wife to be a virgin, in most cases.
Which is why, going back to your book about dating ethnic men, a lot of times they will go back to their own culture to find that virgin bride. Sure. And with, if it's a mixed relationship where one partner is Caucasian, the other one is ethnic, they may leave the Caucasian partner and go back because they want the virgin.
They want the virgin bride. They want it, it's a status symbol to have a bride. It's almost like we in the West, we say a trophy bride, right?
So in other words, I'm a Mercedes Hyman.
it's when we talk about it, it seems unreal, right? But the thing is, it still exists, but it's more covert now. Mm. It's not wide open. People don't really talk about it like we are right now.
Mm-hmm. But, I don't think most people talk about it the way we are right now.
That's it. And you know what? And they should. Because it's about time that these things are put into public consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But here's another thing. When you brought up cross-cultural relationships, there's a lot of pressure put on many of these women from these type of cultures. And what happens is two things. Either they conform to these expectations and hence get hymenoplasty, or what they do is they leave their family and the culture, and they partake in cross-cultural relationships, which is one motivation for these women, these ethnic women, to date Caucasian men. I'm finding right now, I'm taking the notes for my second book, Dating the Ethnic Woman.
Mm.
And because they'd feel less pressure with a Caucasian man who doesn't make virginity or having a virgin wife the main thing to get married to a woman.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's why I can't wait to read your next book.
Yep. You'll get an autograph coffee.
I'm excited about that. And actually, before I forget, listeners, I should probably mention at the top of the hour, I was playing Taxi by Peter Breeze and one of our CITR DJs, Maxwell, as well. I forgot to mention that at the top of the hour. And sorry, Maxwell, if you're listening to this, because you rock, and he's a really good DJ as well.
Great.
Mm-hmm. But I do want an autographed copy because I'm very, very curious.
Excellent.
In regards to virginity, and I find it fascinating it started in LA first, and is that because of a Hollywood thing, or is there, I still see Hollywood as so blonde hair, blue eyed.
Well, you know, even, I mean, right now, Hollywood, Beverly Hills, it's in now. It's not now. The ladies and the men don't ask each other, well, are you seeing a psychologist? Are you seeing a therapist? It's more the question is, how many therapists are you seeing? You know, that's a sort of a joke in the industry here. But the thing is, Hollywood, that area has always been experimental, you know, in all facets of life. And medicine is one. And so this person who pioneers the procedure, he trained many other medical doctors, and a couple of them from the history, the research that I've done, are here in Canada as well.
You're mentioning there's one in White Rock, actually.
Yeah. So it's something that, however you feel, whatever you feel about it, everyone seems to have an opinion about this procedure.
I can only imagine. It definitely brings a completely different concept to the words designer vagina.
There you go. Yeah, it's something that, you know, we could spend hours and hours talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not based on really a solution. I mean, my personal view is that if it's used in a way to promote intimacy and nurturing and communication between two people in a functional relationship, okay, you know, it's an option. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if it's used to deceive anyone, and when you deceive anyone, especially in a relationship, it always comes back to get you.
It does, and especially if it is someone perhaps who has set out to deceive because they're mm-hmm. marrying somebody, arranged marriage perhaps, and then they find out, do they do testing for STIs beforehand? Because what if they're diagnosed with herpes or, sure. or gonorrhea or something yeah. like that yeah. after the fact, and how do you explain that?
Well, here's the thing. If in cases like this, the female is supposed to be a virgin, mm-hmm. so the
it would
STI
come
is,
from the guy.
Yeah, exactly. And STI is not even... See, I mean, sexually transmitted infections, it's a taboo still in certain cultures. Like, you're not supposed to have sex. So the perception is how are you supposed to get an STI?
So I just actually think I found the cure for people who have herpes, basically. It's like, just go and get your hymen redone and pass yourself off as a virgin. It's like, baby, you gave it to me.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it is beginning to happen, and more from the studies that I've read, these physicians are doing about two a month now.
Two a month.
Yeah. And
wow.
and as more people find out about it and the option is there,
mm-hmm.
then they're going to pass this off. Now, that's in North America. The research that I've done, many parents who find out that their daughter is not a virgin, take them overseas, take them back home, and have it done at a fraction of the cost that's done here. Here, it's estimated to be anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 Canadian, mm-hmm. dollars Canadian. But for a fraction of that, you go back to, you know, to India or mm-hmm. to a Middle Eastern country, and you can have it done. And then come back. It's just like, we've heard stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of generations ago where a girl, without getting married, gets pregnant. And so the parents send them off to Uncle Jim's house or Aunt Susie's house.
Mm-hmm.
And she everybody's told in this community that she's going to summer school or going mm-hmm. to something. And she has her baby, leaves the baby there, and then comes back here. It's a hush-hush thing. So now we see this happening with hymenoplasty as well.
And do men from other cultures know what we look like down there as a vagina, what that looks like with a hymen, actually? Like, I guess through internet porn and everything else, you can probably see what... I don't even know if I'd know what it looks like, to be honest, other than the lovely drawing that you did, which I love in our guest book.
I'll send you a link from an online a physician who has before and after pictures online for women to see.
I would love that, because I'd like to post that on my website, actually, because that just sounds fascinating, because I don't think I ever held a mirror up, mm-hmm. even when I was trying to mm-hmm. figure out how to insert Tampax when I was a kid.
You should. Every woman should. But that's another show.
They should. I just didn't do it when I was young enough to do it.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, and my book explains this too, mm-hmm. that a lot of the ethnic men do not perform oral sex on their female partners because they think it's going... they're degrading themselves by going down there, going down on the woman. It's their social status is injured
mm-hmm.
or jeopardized in some way. So the thing is, I doubt they look, but from again, the research that I've done, I forget which country now, but the thing is, some of the women who get this done are afraid. It's a Middle Eastern country, that they go there, and before getting married, there's a doctor, a medical doctor, who actually examines the bride before, and he examines to see if she has a hymen. Now, here's my thing. I've seen the before and after
mm-hmm.
Pictures. To me, anyways, and I'm not a medical doctor, but to me, it seems obvious that there's been something tampered. The hymen, you can see, you know, stitch remarks, marks left over, and the scarring and things like this. So you would think that this medical doctor would sense it, would see it as well. So again, this is an issue. There's no real answers.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real solutions. It's a choice that everyone has to make. But the thing is, making a choice with all the information, both physical, emotional, psychological, relational. mm-hmm. you know, to make this. And no one should be forced into making something like this.
No, I can only imagine the psychological ramifications if the parents forced a young girl mm-hmm. to do this.
Right. I mean, the thing is, the obvious one is that I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm. I've done and the shame.
Wrong. I'm ashamed. Now, the thing is, if you go into this marriage, let's say you have it, and you go into this marriage, you're always scared, I would think, that he might find out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're starting a marriage, and on the way I look at it with my clients, you start a marriage, something that it's one of the most powerful connections between two people,
mm-hmm.
and supposedly starting it, saying that it's based on honesty and trust. If you don't have that in such a big issue that comes up, wow. I mean, do you really, if you're a woman and you had this done and you're always thinking that he might find out, do you really think you're, for example, sex, do you really think you're enjoying sex with this man
no.
all the time thinking, is he going to find out? Is he going to find out? Can he see it? Can he detect it? Right?
You never relax. I don't think you could create a foundation of a solid relationship with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and for all those women out there who think this would be the answer to being a mysterious woman, I beg to differ.
Yes. Well, you have better insight into that than I do. You have the parts.
I do have the parts, but you have the knowledge. Out of curiosity, and I don't know if your research has led, because I know in certain parts of Africa there's a lot of poverty, but I'm thinking in terms of some of the riots to the villages and things like that, if that is something that has reached Africa, at mm-hmm. least that you've heard of.
Yes. Well, the thing is, there's a lot of riots, there's a lot of abuse mm-hmm. done to women, and there are women who are abused to the point where they lose their virginity, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, here's the thing: I know if this is prevalent there,
mm-hmm.
It could be the cost of getting this done, because there are generally poor societies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I know there is one operation, which I will have to get back to our listeners as to what it's called, but mm-hmm. I do know it's because the skin tears between the anus mm-hmm. and the vagina.
Yeah,
so
the
it's
perineum.
Just, perineum,
yeah.
thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes it there's always that smell coming off mm-hmm. because there's always leakage.
Yes, yes.
So I can imagine where if this was available, a lot of the women probably love it just on so many levels
yes.
between that.
Yes, keep in mind, it's just a new procedure.
Mm-hmm.
To my recollection.
How new?
It's 5 years old.
Okay.
It just started. Now, where it's going to go, you know, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We can keep a tap on and see where it's going. But from what I have read about it, it's gaining momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd be really curious. And in terms of ethnic cultures, in terms of circumcision, I don't know if that mm-hmm. comes up at all in terms mm-hmm. of male circumcision.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, I know at one point when I used to host Juicebox Radio with Julia Saunders, we had a guest on who was actually speaking about how there are men who are actually putting weights on the remnants of their foreskin to try and stretch out. And I'd be mm-hmm. curious to see if there's reconstructive mm-hmm. surgery, if that's going to happen
yeah,
that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it could. I haven't heard anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it's possibility
mm-hmm.
that of course the men can, you know, the thing is, the way society is structured, it's all of these type of surgeries are more dealing with women
mm-hmm.
because we put so much of the pressure on women to perform, to look a certain way, body image, body type, and now to be a virgin. And so the thing is, in one way you look at it, it's like a patriarchal society
mm-hmm.
we live in, where the onus is on the women for satisfaction, whether sexually or relationally.
Why do you think that is? When did that flip? Because if you go back to a lot of really ancient times, there were drawings of like labia on the wall. It just looked so beautiful, like the yoni, and it was worshipped.
Mm-hmm.
And I always assumed that was because of the fact that, you know, they'd see babies come out of there from birth, and so it was a beautiful thing.
Right.
And when did that evolve, where that stopped being worshipped, and all of a sudden it was expected, or is there we expected because of the fact they figure that women are should be strong enough to take it?
Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, historically, the world was sex positive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have the example you've stated, you have the Kama Sutra in the Middle East, you have all of these things that where you look at sexuality and sexual interaction as a functional, nurturing type of thing between people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think then, I mean, as time went on, we have certain religions that influence people's thoughts. Now, keep in mind, sex and religion, even though certain religions, if you study it, I mean, it's sex positive. But the thing is, people in power, I think, use religion to dominate
control.
And control certain people. Now, if you control someone's sexuality, you're controlling a big aspect of their personality, of their identity. And if you can do that, you control the being.
Well, that leads me into asking some questions. Our Vancouver Pride Society, our Pride Day is coming up very, very soon. I'm actually really excited, and I'm hoping to have you come on so we can talk a little bit more about that. But shame, stigma, that's controlled for a very long time. Like, that's one of the reasons why we celebrate Pride, because it took so long to take that and embrace that and own that. How, in terms of ethnic cultures, is basically gay and lesbian relationships looked at?
I mean, the thing is,
and these are general statements,
yes,
I know.
Yes, the typical ethnic culture looks at homosexuality or bisexuality or any alternative lifestyle as a sin, as taboo.
Okay.
It's not even talked about that much. I mean, I think the last time, the president of Iran was at Columbia University, and someone in the audience asked him about homosexuality in Iran. And to my recollection, he said something, it doesn't exist in Iran. Now, of course, that got quite a bit of laughter from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Homosexuality exists everywhere, in all species.
Yes.
Right, we know that here, but the thing is, again, that was basically a symbol that in certain cultures they don't even want to talk about it.
Wow.
Because even talking about it is sinful.
Giving it power, almost.
And giving it power and giving it a voice.
Hmm.
So the thing is, when a man, let's say, or a woman is gay or lesbian in these certain societies, what they do most of the time is they suppress their sexual orientation, their desires, and they play into what society expects, meaning marriage and having children. Yet, are they happy sexually? Well, in most cases, no. And the thing is, if they're not happy sexually, do you really think they're going to have a good relationship otherwise as well? Because sex impacts the way you relate with your partner as well.
Mm-hmm.
I had a client who in San Francisco who was talking about the gay pride over there, parade, and he goes, those people, they're all going to hell. And I was like, this is the 21st century now, and we still have people thinking like this. And so to explore it further, he didn't want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to go there. It was just like, he goes that, it's against my religion, and therefore I don't want to talk about it. And so now when we have things like the Pride Parade and things like this, this, again, gives voice to people, and it becomes more normal in a sense. It creates a sense of typicalness in our society that, you know, it don't isolate these people and hide them under a rock.
So basically letting go of shame and really being proud regardless what your sexuality is.
Yeah, sure. We want to get things. What I do with my clients in many cases is we try to overcome two things, shame and guilt.
Mm-hmm.
If you can free yourself from these two toxic emotions, you're going to be a better functional human being.
I think that sounds very, very healthy, and sounds like it could be a journey going through a lot of stuff before people are ready to let go of that.
Oh, sure. And the thing is, one of the things to help a person going through this is to look at the person non-judgmentally, because they've been judged by so many people in their lives. Mm-hmm. And if a person feels not judged, then they're all going to open up more. Mm-hmm. And they're going to talk about their feelings and actually allow themselves to really experience these emotions that they have pent up for so many years.
Wow. Yeah. No, I think it's great that you do what you do. With your book, Dating the Ethnic Man, mm-hmm. I'm also heterosexual myself, so when I read it, I actually saw it in that context, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of the examples are, have you had clients that perhaps a mixed relationship where one is dating an ethnic man, whether they're banana, like, mm-hmm. and when I say that, I mean in general, a first generation,
cookie.
Thank you. Yes. I was trying to think of all the things because you have such good ones. So.
Oh, sure. And just to quickly clarify what I mean by banana and Oreo cookie and coconut.
Even though it makes you all hungry?
Yes. It basically, what I mean is these are the individuals who respect their culture and their upbringing, but they're not victimized by their expectations from these sources. They mm-hmm. can think clearly and make their own judgment based on what is good for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, to answer your question, yes, I have. I've had clients who are one of these foods and dating someone who is from
same sex
culture. Yeah, and same sex, sure. And the thing is, there is that conflict because the person who is one of these foods is more open to the experience and much more liberated and not pressured by the sexual oriented taboos. Whereas someone who's, for example, a new immigrant from here, they have the sexual orientation, but they are still plagued by all the guilt and shame of people finding out. So whereas one partner, you know, wants to hold hands with the other partner in public, the other partner is always looking behind, over his or her shoulder, mm-hmm. in case someone from their own community sees them. And oh my God, what if this goes back to their community or their family members and things? Because it's the new immigrant knows the back of his or her mind that the parents want to arrange a marriage for him or her.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd be very curious to see stats on the suicide rate, actually, in that regard.
Yes. Well, I'm assuming it's higher,
mm-hmm.
right? Because there's a lot of this pressure put on these people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know for transgender, just in general, regardless of race, mm-hmm. like that tends to be, it tends to be fairly high as well, especially oh, yes. male to female.
Oh, yes. It tends to be high because the thing is, these people come from a collectivistic culture.
Mm-hmm.
And in their culture, it's supposed to be, I mean, every move you make, whether which program to take at university or who to date, who to marry, how many children to have, it's a communal sort of decision made between the elders and the parents, you know, and other siblings and things like this. So then when you show that you are sort of have a lifestyle mm-hmm. that is separate from what is expected of you, wow, there's the weight of the whole world on your shoulder.
Wow.
Thinking that, what will people think? What will people say?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's almost like, you know, you're putting yourself in the center of, and there's very few people, unfortunately, who lend a nurturing, empathic ear. It's all like, oh, no, don't do that. You can change. That's nothing. It's a choice. You can change. You don't have to go with your feelings or your intuition or what your beliefs are. No, we believe this. Mm-hmm. Our religion believes this. Our culture believes this. So it, when you hear that daily, of course, it has an impact on a person.
Yeah.
And they think that right away, they think there's something wrong with them.
I was just going to say shame.
Shame.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I know I've had Margot Donnellos from the Amazing Woman's Weekend on before, and she was mentioning that just men will go out of their way to avoid shame, whatever they can. So if that's something that's just kind of embedded, where it's just the pressure cooker situation, I can only imagine what that would do to somebody after time.
Well, what happens is this, unfortunately. If they don't resolve this with a trained therapist or some other way, these men, because of the cultural and the familiar expectations, they do get married. Even though they want to be with a man, they get married to a woman, and they have children, because that's what's expected. But what happens is this, their sexual orientation, and it's naturally, it's pulling them toward another man. So they have affairs. They have a wife at home and family life, and to meet this sort of expectations that role they play, this role with the community, but then they have secret affairs on the side. Now, in many cases, the wife knows about this. I mean, you can't hide
and people are pretty intuitive.
Sure, but again, she doesn't say anything either, because everyone's playing a role, playing a part in this grand scheme of what's called a play. Now, the question then I ask people, I guess, is, are you happy? And they look at me like I ask them a question that's like, what's the meaning of life? because happiness doesn't factor in. It's like, well, you know, I have to do this. I've done this. I'm playing by the what's expected. And so what's happiness got to do with it?
That's heartbreaking.
Yes.
I think a lot of happiness seems to be pretty elusive sometimes, just in general. But
yes, sure. Because the thing is, I think that you can't answer that question if you are deceiving your own self. So if you get in touch, do a lot of introspection and see what your beliefs are, and if you are following those, abiding by your personal beliefs. So there's no cognitive dissonance then. It's not like you believe one thing, but you're doing something else to prove, you know, to follow some form of expectations. If you gel these two, which is what I do in therapy with my clients, then you can answer the question if you're happy or not.
I'm not really sure what to say to that. That sounds fascinating, though.
Yeah. It's, you know, there. One of the things, two things, love and then happiness. If you are just walking around and do this casual survey, right? And you go to anyone and just ask them, I'm doing a survey, you know, UBC, my radio, and this friend told me to do this. Are you happy? And you'll see their face. I've done it. They're looking at you like, wait a minute. I mean, on the surface, it's like a reasonable question.
Yeah.
But they're looking like, is there a hidden meaning here? Is there something, they're waiting for me to say more, like define happiness or something. So I go, no, just, are you happy? And very few people will right away say without a shadow of a doubt, yes. Right?
I think that makes sense. I think our society almost embraces contentment more as opposed to happiness.
Sure.
Where happiness, we almost think of it as overdone, especially in Vancouver, which, try as we might, I think we are very conservative in our own strange way.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, if someone hesitates or says no, I say, you know, all you have to do is do a little bit of introspection on yourself. Find out who you are, what you like, and then do it. You'll be happy.
I think that's really key for everything, isn't it?
It is. It is. You can fool other people. You can't fool yourself.
And that's true.
It sounds like a cliche, but it is true.
And if you're lying to yourself, that's pretty heartbreaking. But I think we all do it from different times of our lives. We're going to take a really tiny short break, and when we get back, we're going to chat a little bit more. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM CITR. We will be right back.
CITR 101.9 FM is proud to support the Vancouver Pride Society in the 2010 Pride season. With great events leading up to Pride, including Gay Day at Playland July 17th, Picnic in the Park July 24th, and the Friday Night Dance Party on Davie Street to kick off Pride weekend. The Pride Parade starts at 12 p.m. on Sunday, August 1st, and the party continues until 5 p.m. at the Pride Festival at Sunset Beach. Join us for an incredible celebration of culture and diversity. For more information and event listings, visit vancouverpride.ca.
You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
And we are back at Sexy in Van City Radio 101.
Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, wow. I don't know what's sexier, my recording or myself. If you're just joining us, obviously you're listening to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. We started off chatting about re-virginization, and we've been talking about just about different types of relationships and in terms of ethnic cultures. And I'm very excited because I have Faisal Sahukan on, and I said his name right. Hallelujah. So, what is next for you? You're mentioning in terms of having a blog on your website. So, what am I going to get to see?
Well, the blog just went up just a few hours ago.
Oh, so it's fresh and virginal.
It's fresh, virgin. I don't think anybody has logged on to that yet, so you're welcome to be the first.
I just might pop your cherry, and what a great show, re-virginalization.
There you go.
To pop up there for your first post.
I might have to find a surgeon to reconstruct my blog then.
You just might, or people can keep listening to it, so they'll repost.
That's it. Yeah, so it's on my website, multiculturalromance.com, and people are free to go through that, and some of my interviews are on there as well, and just have an evening, bring out the popcorn and things, comments are always welcome.
Nice. Can they download your book as well on there, or can they purchase it at Chapters still?
They can purchase at Chapters. Metrodown Chapters has it. The best thing that a lot of people are doing, actually, is just going through my website and ordering right from my website. That way they get they get me to sign it, and they can just write whatever they would like me to write for them on it, and I'll be happy to do that and have it sent out to them in the mail.
That's awesome. I was also going to ask about the online version for people who are buying those Kindle things.
Yeah, it's
obviously I haven't bought one yet.
It's coming. It's coming.
Pun intended.
No pun intended, or intended for the show. There's going to be an ebook version shortly too.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
So tell me about the research you're doing for your new book, Dating the Ethnic Woman.
Yes. Well, the thing is, I've had lots of women who've, and men, rather, who said that, well, geez, you know, I mean, the original book, Dating the Ethnic Man, if you read it, I mean, it applies to all different types of relationships, cross-cultural and non-cross-cultural, men, women, from all the things. Everyone can get something out of it. But then I've had a lot of men who say that, well, we wanted a book especially that meets our needs, right, for the ethnic woman. So the research has begun, the interviewing has begun, and it's the other book, the first book, took me 4 years to write, and from the first word I wrote to the publication date, and so we'll see how this one, I'm hoping this one will take less time. But it'll again, it's like the first one, it'll be based on client cases and my own views on things, and it's nurturing in a sense that it has a therapeutic element basis around it, so that anyone can read this light reading and get something where they can understand themselves and understand their partners and therapeutic interventions in such a layman's term that they can apply these strategies right away and enhance their relationship almost immediately.
I think that's really important.
Yes.
So I have a weird question for you.
Nothing's weird.
All right.
I've heard it all.
Okay, in terms of sexuality, I've always thought of automatically pheromones are huge, and if you've got very similar value systems, it's really, you can have happy, healthy relationships if the foundation of the relationship is there, and it's built in friendship as well. Mm-hmm. How do you get that spark going if there isn't anything? Because your parents put you together?
Oh, yes. Well, I can tell you from successful arranged marriages, what people who agree to arranged marriages have in common is that sense of a few things, a sense of loyalty, a sense of commitment to the relationship. So when they get married, they realize, okay, well, this is it. There's no other option. Divorce is not really talked about, and so we're going to have to make it work. And so what happens in these people, and because these cultures, they believe that love happens after marriage, right? Not before. It's in our Western culture, we think love is a prerequisite to even the proposal and getting married and things like this, engagement. But arranged marriage, those who are involved in an arranged marriage, believe that love happens after your marriage. So they believe that if you put the people together in close proximity with certain similar values, like religion and culture and maybe language and belief system, that love will happen automatically. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Right? So the key thing here is that if they're committed in a relationship, and now I use this phrase for any relationship, that if there's commitment in the relationship, you can work all the challenges out. You can iron all those things out. Because if you know that the foundation is there and that person is not going to leave you for someone else better looking or more intelligent or et cetera, then you can build upon that. Now, I mean, there's individual cases, of course, where sometimes nothing works. Sometimes you just completely have nothing in common, right? And then, well, you try. You try to negotiate. You try to, you know, I tell husbands, well, you know, watch Home and Garden with her. And she can watch, you know, the Canucks with you or something like that. Once the partners see that the other one is actually trying to make it work, you can make these relationships successful.
So what is something that we can take from ethnic relationships? Because that sounds really key to basically popping that in our fast food Western world and making our relationships last a little longer.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I'm not going to say you stumped me, but you're close.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm thinking about my other clients, and really what we take from what my Caucasian clients have said as to why they're in a relationship with their ethnic partner, and they've said many reasons. One of the reasons is that they feel validated. They feel validated. Now, the thing is, in any successful relationship, you validate your partner, and the partner validates you. Mm-hmm. Your sense of being, who you are, in a non-judgmental way. So if you can get that type of commitment and validation from the partner, wow, you kind of feel like a super person. You know, it feels good knowing that you're not going to be judged. You're not going to be put down or criticized. Just that you are who you are and you're accepted that way.
So it's unconditional love is what I'm hearing.
That's right, unconditional love. And that's so important. It's paramount to most relationships, yeah.
So for those people out there who are basically looking online all the time trying to find something, what advice would you give those people who are searching constantly, whether or not it be on an ethnic site, whether or not, I've got a girlfriend who's Greek, for example, who only wanted to date Greek boys, who actually flew out to go see somebody in New York, it wasn't a fit. But
Well, you know, the thing is, there's two ways of looking at it. I'm sure there's lots of successful stories in all these online dating services and things like that. Sure, I can. Again, commitment is ideal if two people connect in that way. But you know, sometimes we can get too picky. You know, we progress into society, I think, that we want everything to be perfect. We want everything. If the person that you, if you really despise nose pickers and you're on a date with someone and all of a sudden he does something that looks like he's picking his nose and you're like, okay, texting a friend right away that, nope, this, not this guy. He's not going to see a second date. These type of things. But the thing is, if we sometimes overlook the flaws of our partners and just look sometimes at the good side, the good, the nurturing, the functional side of people, I think we're going to be able to find many people who fit our role of a potential mate.
That makes a lot of sense. I know there's that standard thing where you're supposed to put together your criteria list before you go looking and do a lot of self-evaluation.
Yes.
And I agree with you with that, like, for example, using the nose picker. And it is sometimes where it's a matter of...
True story?
Truth. Well, I don't know about nose picker. But I know for myself, and one of my things was that I would never want to date a smoker. And my boyfriend smokes, and I love him to death. So...
Yes.
Which if I had never gotten past that, granted we were friends first, but it's, you know, and I'm the luckiest girl in the world.
Yeah,
so.
Great to hear.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, the thing is, if there are some things that are really against your core beliefs, then of course that needs to be discussed to see if there's any type of negotiation. Maybe, for example, someone whose partner is a smoker and you're not, for example, you could ask that person to maybe smoke outside the house instead of in the apartment or in the house and things like this. There's always ways to negotiate.
And I think that's really key, like what you said. It's so important just to realize that we can't be too picky. We got to keep our eyes open. It's one of those things, because otherwise opportunity could be knocking for love and finding a potential mate, and we just may not see it.
That's right.
Not that everyone out there that you should let go of all your standards, but just kind of being really aware and just trying to... seeing what's out there.
Exactly. Know who you are. Know your core beliefs. Know something that you can sort of be flexible on and trust yourself.
I think that's the big key in this society is trusting.
That's it. That's it. When you have a nurturing, trusting relationship with yourself, you can give more of yourself to your partner and build that trust as a couple. And with that trust, I mean, you can build so much more when you have the foundation of trust and commitment.
And going full circle back to our conversation at the very beginning about re-virginization, right there where you said that you can do anything when you have that kind of trust, which if you're doing your re-virginization and it's deception, I don't think you'll ever have that and never be completely fulfilled in a relationship.
No. I mean, you may be able to deceive your partner, maybe for all your married life, but the thing is, you cannot deceive yourself.
No. And that's really, really key.
That's it.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're very welcome, Caroline.
Well, I look forward to having you on again, and hopefully, because I'll be broadcasting live at Pride, so I'm very excited about it during the parade. So everybody out there, come and check out the CITR float, and I'm hoping I will have you on there, which will be nice.
I'm looking forward to it if I can.
Next thing you know, you end up riding the whole float and hand out business cards and say, hey!
So. Put it between the condoms.
Actually, that may not be a bad idea for a CITR fundraiser. Guess how many condoms are in the jar.
That's it. How many you can put on at the same time?
And how many you can use all in one night.
There you go.
Which could be very, very important with the whole safe sex thing. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Up next is Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour. He is a very, very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. And he's like, no, 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 grumbling about something. I don't want to what you?
No, that's what Luke always says. You know him, you love him. That's okay. You'll know him, you love him, but you know, you don't want to be him.
I hope you all heard him out there. You know him, you love him, but you don't want to be him. And who's that quote by?
Luke.
By Luke. Ah, Luke Meat, our music director for the station. Well,
I like that.
Keep listening. 101.9 FM, CITR. We will be back next week. Bye-bye.
What happened to 10 o'clock?
Ask him if he knows.
Avec Marie-Ève Dumoulin pour tout savoir sur les activités culturelles francophones de Vancouver et ses environs, plus de la musique 100% francophone du Québec et d'ailleurs. With French Connection, you will discover everything about the French culture on CITR 101.9 FM.
America is a big market. If there is more money in my pocket.